Okay, so we have a great fortune to be able to learn Maseches Ksubis, and Maseches Ksubis has very specific themes and very broad themes. And among the undercurrents in this Masechta, overtly the Masechta is about the contractual obligations of marriage. But more broadly speaking, it is about, as we discussed extensively in the first semester, about how Chazal perceived the values of the Torah to be relating to how spouses should relate to each other, and how the mitzvah of Kiddushin, which is a mitzvah min HaTorah, according to the Rambam and the Sefer HaChinuch and others, is about directing us to a more serious relationship, that if a man and woman want to live together, so the Torah commands that that can't be a casual thing, that has to happen through the process of Kiddushin. And Chazal built into that more obligations, as represented by the Ksuba, which, according to this one opinion in the Gemara and one opinion in the Rishonim, could be on some level min HaTorah. Most assume that it's midrabanan, and as we discussed in great detail last semester, it's probably somewhere in between. It is Chazal giving more detail to the Torah's vision that this is a serious relationship and it has obligations, a mutual obligation. So much of the second half of the Masechta is about the details of the mutual obligations between the husband and wife. Certain things the husband has to provide for the wife, certain things that the wife has to provide for the husband, and how this addresses the idea that there should be seriousness and appreciation within the relationship, and also that therefore it shouldn't be broken off too casually. That one of the statements the Gemara has for the purpose of the institution of Ksuba, Kidei Shalo Yehei Kala Be'ena of Lahotzia, that it shouldn't be a casual thing. The husband shouldn't decide, okay, I'm tired of her now, so I'll just divorce her. There's no consequences. So the Ksuba may be entirely, at least according to some implications in the Gemara, there to make sure that that's not a casual thing, that if you're going to do that, you're going to take it seriously and you're going to compensate her. So whether it's during the marriage, whether it's after the marriage, all of this Masechta is geared towards making this relationship a more serious, respectful, mutual, and appreciated one. And with that, it's not just about the husband and wife, it's really about the community as a whole. I spoke about this, if anyone was there, day after Yom Kippur, we had a Siyum for Daf Yomi, an introduction to Seder Nashim, how Nashim is really not just about marriage relationship, it's about the family, and by extension, all of us. That it's all about how we relate to each other. The husband and wife is supposed to be the ideal relationship. And the Gemara says in the beginning of the second parak of Kiddushin that a husband's obligated to love his wife because of Yahav Telarecha Kamocha. At the same pasuk that governs all of our relationships is invoked in the context of the most intimate personal relationship. And it's a way of suggesting, perhaps, that really this is our entree into relationships, but all of our relationships should be somewhere along this spectrum. That we should have a degree of mutual respect and concern. We have the most mutual respect and concern with our spouses, but by extension, it's a different degree and different application, but that's true about everybody else as well. And therefore, the Masechta is also on some level about all of our relationships. And therefore, it's also about who we are as a community. It's also about how we relate as a communal unit, not just as a marital unit. And in that sense, one of the themes that you find in this Masechta, a lot throughout the second parak, in fact, second half of the Masechta, is that the community has a responsibility to make sure certain things are happening, to make sure that things are taking place that should be taking place. So one of the major links between the two topics I said before that we'll talk about this semester, the topic of staka and the topic of making sure that there is a proper divorce when a marriage has ended. So in both of those contexts, you find the notion of what we call kfiya, or kofin. We find that the community has a responsibility, that Beis Din has a responsibility, that there is a recognition that if individuals are not coming through with what they're supposed to be doing, so then there is an obligation on the community to make sure that happens. It's represented by Beis Din. Beis Din is functioning as the emissary of the community as a whole. And therefore, certain communal values are reflected through this idea. So as we'll see later on, when we get more into the Gittin Sugyas, so the Gemara, also in Ksubas, discusses a general idea of Kofin, Kofin al-Hamitzvos, that just our personal responsibilities And whether they're positive mitzvos or negative mitzvos that we find sometimes that Beis Din will get involved in enforcing. And that has applications in the realm of divorce, that if one spouse or the other is not allowing the other to move on and is imposing emotional and practical suffering on the other, so, as the Gemara tells us, there's a space under the proper circumstances and the proper methodology for Beis Din to get involved in that. And we also find, for our first topic here, that Beis Din can get involved, and maybe sometimes should get involved, in staka. And that's a very powerful idea on a couple of levels. The idea is one might have thought that staka is really a very personal thing, and one might have thought that it's also something that by its very nature is not subject to kfiya. Now, why might you think that? Why might you think that staka is not the kind of concept that a Beis Din should get involved in? There's a few reasons. You may have seen the Tosfos, which has technical reasons, which is also an answer to the question. But even without Tosfos' reasons, there are other reasons why you might think that this is not something that Beis Din really has a place for.
Charity, by definition, has to go above and beyond the law.
Okay, so that's one very major point, right? One might assume that staka, and here I'm sure you've heard people discuss the etymology of the word staka as opposed to the etymology of the word charity in English. Maybe they don't really correspond so well to each other, even though we use one as a translation for the other. Maybe that's something we can talk about a little bit. But at least without getting into what the words actually mean, but one maybe would have thought that staka is something I give because I feel like it, because I don't have to. And where exactly does Beis Din have a place in terms of compelling me to do something like that? Any other thoughts about that? Any other reasons why it's a surprise that Beis Din involved?
It seems like it's a very specific to that person, and so therefore you can't create a people being forced to give if it's so specific.
That person is under the donor or the recipient?
Both.
Okay.
It could be that they're not rich enough to give, and it could be that that person's not poor enough to be given to. And so since it's so specific, maybe based on...
Okay, there's so much that we can't assess so well, right. Essentially. You're saying a couple things in that point. They could all be true.
You can force a tax upon the whole community. Each person has to give 1% of their wealth.
You could make a flat percentage kind of tax. Perhaps, except that what Ari's also pointing out is there are other elements. We don't know necessarily where the money comes from. We don't know what other needs they have. We don't know what types of burdens they have. So what are you saying here is that even if we were to say, Morty made one very real point, that this whole endeavor would seem to be something which should be voluntary by its very nature. And therefore, Beis Din maybe doesn't really have a place. On top of that, Ari's making a different point, that even if we say it's an obligation, let's say we are to address it as an actual obligation, but is this an obligation that we could really ask any external body to assess with any fairness? Considering that we have two different big variables. We have the variables, or sets of variables. We have the variable that relates to the donor. We don't really know what he's capable of doing. And we have the variables which, if you see through the rest of the Gemaras here, that this daf, Samach Zayin Iksubis, very much addresses this, that we don't really know what's the story with the recipient. There's all kinds of variables with the recipient. What kind of variables could there be? Just off the top of your head, what kind of variables might be relevant to the recipient? What's the difference if I have five poor people asking me for money? So what possible hidden variables could there be?
Men and women.
Okay, so that's one the Mishnah talks about, right? That one's not so hidden, but that's an important one, right? That's in terms of prioritizing between people, right? That's an important one. What else?
Children,
you mean how many children they have? Right, we don't know what their old expenses are beyond their poverty level.
What was he beforehand? Be rich.
Oh, right, so De Maxero, right, is addressing that issue, right, that how should we consider their past history and their past standards in terms of what we give or how we give? What else? A couple of other major things that Gemara is talking about. What about their capacity to be working? Should we distinguish between people who could support themselves and people and just don't, or people who really can't support themselves? Does that factor in at all? Right, that's a discussion the Gemara is going to touch upon. And do we have to worry about how honest they are? If they come and they say, this is my story, so to what extent are we obligated to question the story? And that's, on a couple of levels, an important question to ask. Because presumably, if staka is a responsibility, that if tzedakah is just I do it because it seems a nice thing to do, so then, all right, so maybe I have the discretion to not worry so much about whether the person really deserves it. But if there is any kind of system of absolutes here, which is what's indicated by the fact of Bezdin getting involved, right? If Bezdin gets involved, as Morty was saying, so there's got to be some kind of objective absolutes here. So then I probably have a responsibility also to make sure the recipients are actually who they say they are, or actually are as needy as they say they are. So that's one of the major themes that this Daf, Tamach Zayin Subas, is going to pick up on. So what we see before that is that just before Tamach Zayin, it gave you that very brief passage on Daf Memtes, so look at Daf Memtes in the base. So that, what comes out from that, is first of all the fact that Kfiya is apparently relevant when it comes to Staka, and that's going to have all kinds of implications. Whether or not in our contemporary society we do this is a fair question. Whether or not we should do it, maybe we don't do it and we should, that's itself a question. But whether or not it's practical to compel Staka is already a side point, because the fact that it's conceivable is itself an interesting, important statement about a lot of aspects of tzedakah, and that's what we've seen already from some of the comments that have been made. So just the very fact that it's even a part of the discussion, whether or not it actually gets done, but that there is such a concept which seems to suggest that the recipients have a claim here. It's not just that you're doing them a favor, but that they have a claim. So that's a very powerful statement with all kinds of detailed implications. As we mentioned, Tosfos over there asks a technical question, not the kind of question you would come up with on your own, that Tosfos addresses the fact that this doesn't seem to fit the rules of Kfiya. We'll talk about that more in detail later, but the Gemara says that we're only kofa, we only involve Bezin in certain types of mitzvos, not a mitzvah which the Torah says comes with any kind of reward. And in the context of tzedakah, the Torah says that there's a bracha associated with it. So Tosfos has a few answers, but one answer that's particularly noteworthy, and you notice Tosfos is often quoted on this point. It's a very frequently noted Tosfos, even though Tosfos is really just quoting the pasuk. But it's calling our attention in a very pointed way to the pasuk. So what is the pasuk? Let's take a look at that together. That was also the first item on the list. And so the pasuk says, a tupsukim say in Parshas Re'eh, and almost every word in this set of tupsukim has halachic significance. But what does the pasuk say? Ki yiyeh v'cho evyom me'echad achecha be'echad sharecha ve'artzecha asher Hashem alokecha nosein lach. When there shall be within you an evyon from one of your brothers in your gates, in your land, that God will give you. And every word so far, by the way, is relevant to some of the questions of priorities in Staka, which is statements in Chazal, not so much in this daf, but that maybe we'll talk about if you have an opportunity. But what does the pasuk continue to say? Lo sa'ameis es levavcha, v'lo sikbots es yodcha me'achicha ha'evyon. You should not harden your heart, and you should not close your fist from your destitute brother. Ki fasoach tiftach es yodcha lo, rather you should open your hand to him. V'havei tavitenu, you may have to end up loaning and getting involved on that level. Dei machsoro asher yachsaro, that which is missing, that which he is lacking. And so our Gemara focuses on those last two words, dei machsoro, but that's a detail of a bigger mitzvah. So what's the bigger mitzvah? So the mitzvah, you'd say, okay, open your hands, right? Kifasoach tiftach. That's a positive mitzvah. But what Tosfos calls our attention to, and again, it's right there in the pasuk, but the Tosfos is quoted more often than the pasuk, because maybe you might have thought the pasuk is not so specific, or maybe it's talking more homiletically. Right? You could have thought that, question, what is Tosfos being mechadish here? Right? So you could have thought that reading this pasuk, and what's the Torah saying? Torah is saying, don't be stingy, don't be nasty, don't close your heart, don't harden your heart, don't close your fist. Do the positive mitzvah of giving tzedakah. But what Tosfos calls our attention to is, no, it's not just a positive mitzvah. There are prohibitions associated with it. And that maybe for some halachic purposes, we treat this as an avera. We treat the failure to give tzedakah as an avera. And not just one avera, but two lavim. So what Tosfos really focuses on is that the pasuk is not just telling you a little bit of Musar Shmuz before introducing the mitzvah, the positive mitzvah of staka. The Torah doesn't just give you a little bit of an exhortation, don't be stingy, don't hold back, but rather this. It's more than that. The Torah is essentially giving us two isurim. And as we see throughout halacha, there are often differences between a positive mitzvah and a negative mitzvah. And Tosfos is suggesting that that's the case here, that we treat staka like a losase, that failure to give staka is treated like actually two losases, and that has practical implications, and it's also scary. Right? We're all approached, you come here in Washington Heights, right? So we're all approached multiple times. You go to Yerushalayim, you go anywhere else. So you're all approached multiple times asking for tzedaka, and none of us are in a position to give to everybody who asks. So is the Torah basically saying that if you say no at all, then you're in violation of two lavim? So if 500 people a day ask you for tzedaka and you can only give for the first 499, and you say no to the 500th person, so it's like you're eating pork and wearing shatnez at the same time? Like two lavin, is that the implication of the puzzle? So that's both scary on a personal level, and the halachic implications are very powerful. Sally, you had a question?
Yeah, I was just wondering, what's the difference between when you're collecting from your field, mm-hmm. whatever falls, you have to let the poor people.
Right,
like
a shifa and
pay. What's between them and tzedakah? Because it seems like there's a lot of distinctions. Like over there, we're not classifying. The differences in who's poor, who's not. We're not classifying how much the person who owns the field, how much does he have or not, And also, it's an obligation to kind of force you to not touch the food that falls on the floor.
Well, that's a little bit true, but it's not totally true because there are some differences in terms of how we define pay or looking at the pointers. There are some differences for different wealth levels. But the broader point is that it is part of the tzedaka family. It's a different type of obligation of tzedaka. And as far as the Rambam is concerned, right, this is all one parsha, it's all one unit. And the Rambam, where he puts the laws of tzedaka, basically for that reason it would seem, is in Zrayim. Right? That if you want to look up the laws of tzedaka in the Rambam, and the Rambam is very famous for his codification of tzedaka, for introducing certain ideas into tzedaka, which are also in other svarim as well, but that's Rambam's codification of tzedaka is often quoted, very important point. I think entire books, English books, have been written about the Rambam's prioritizing of tzedaka and hierarchy of tzedaka. So where do you find that in Mishneh Torah? So it's called Hilchos Matnas Aniyim, but Hilchos Matnas Aniyim is part of Zroyim, it's part of the agricultural laws, because the assumption is they all flow together. So the Torah mandates certain things within the context of agriculture, and that's what brings us into this whole topic of tzedaka. But you're right, there are some specific obligations there which are different, but they're certainly all part of the tzedaka family. See how they...
Why over there are there certain obligations which you may not find by tzedaka?
In terms of what? In terms of being asked?
Such as that you can't pick up whatever that you glean. Whatever that felt.
Well, it's a different format of making it available. Each one of them is going to have its own rules. Maybe we'll have a chance to see a little bit how they contrast with each other, but it's all connected, and that's why it ends up that way as far as the Rambam's presentation. So, one question, we're going to run out of time, so we'll have to continue this a little bit tomorrow. Again, as you see, what I would do first, in terms of tomorrow, is first do the Gemara. So you have the Gemara till the end of Samach Zayin, before looking at anything else. So that you'll see as many of the themes that come up over there. But this idea of there being a positive mitzvah and two prohibitions is a powerful thought. Parenthetically, so we mentioned that you could have thought that the lavin are more just the Musar Shmuz, or more just kind of an introduction to saying that it's a positive mitzvah. The Vilna Gaon was quoted as saying that the idea of lo sikbo tzis yadcha, that you shouldn't clench your fist. He noted that when you clench your fist, so it looks like all your fingers are the same size. But when you open up your hand, so then you see that the fingers are all different sizes. So he thought homiletically there was a message there that tzedakah is a particularly challenging area of halacha, and this is a point that I think Aryeh was alluding to, that on the one hand here we have set halachos, But on the other hand, the variables are so powerful, there's so many different details which are going to be very hard to just feed into a computer. And you can't just say, okay, so I have an app that's going to tell me exactly who to give sucker to. It's not going to work, even if I feed in all the details of this Samach Zayin and Subis and all the details of Yeridea and say what exactly the rules are. It's still not going to tell me exactly who to give to, because there's always going to be many real-life variables that are going to be difficult to assess. So that's what the Vilna Gaon suggested the Pasuk was getting at, that when you close your fist, it looks like a closed book, and you think, okay, everything could just be put in the computer and you'll get the answer you want. But in real life, you open your hands, you see everything's different. This is an area where all the more so that's true. And so again, that then emphasizes the question, so how exactly does Beis Din get involved in such a thing? That's a fair question. So essentially, I guess we're almost going to run out of time, so let me leave you with a question that we'll pick up with tomorrow as part of our introduction. What would you say about the following? Let's say, God willing, it should be true, I'll give you a bracha. Someday you should be so wealthy that you have to hire someone to give out your money as tzedakah. Right? So you are so wealthy that you don't have time to pay attention to giving out of all of your money, so you trust someone to make decisions for you, to give out your tzedakah. So one day you wake up in the morning and you say, Jeeves, whatever his name is, say, I'm really feeling today like I need to help somebody really needy. I want you to find me a really poor person and bring him over here, and I'm going to write him a huge check. So, comes back an hour later, finds the most pathetic looking person, who's totally bedraggled, his old clothes are torn, doesn't have shoes, he looks totally miserable. He tells you the story, he's got 37 kids and all of them are starving, and he was fired from 5 different jobs at once, and he has to go uphill both ways in the snow while it's raining and it's too hot, and somehow he has every possible sorrow in life. So, alright, happy, this is exactly the guy you're looking for. Alright, so you write out your very large check to this guy. Then, as they're walking out, so you have your security cameras outside, so you see that the guy who you trusted to find this guy, and this person who came in and got your money, you see that they give each other a high five on the way out, and you see that he changes out of his bedraggled clothes, and it turns out that he's really not so poor at all, and he's an actor who your employee found, and really he's not anything that he claims to be. So you come to your employee and you say, I understand, I trusted you, so find me a needy recipient. And this is what you brought me, an actor who doesn't really need it at all. The whole thing was a fake out. But I trusted you. And your employee says, yeah, but you know, doesn't it make you feel good? You wanted to give this guy to feel good, and you did, so I accomplished what you asked me to do. I'm sorry you happened to see that he was an actor. That wasn't part of the plan. But I did my job. What would you think of such an employee? Fire him right away?
Yeah.
You think that he pretty much messed up on his job and probably committed some kind of crime? All right, so let me ask you this question, and we'll have to pick up with this tomorrow. So what's the difference between that and what HaKadosh Baruch Hu does to Avraham Avinu in the beginning of Parshas Vayera? In the beginning of Parshas Vayera, so the Torah tells us, and Chazal fill in the details, Avram, the Torah tells us Avram is visited by the three travelers, and the Gemara in Bava Metzi explains the details that Avram was sick and recuperating from his bris milah, and he was miserable because he didn't have an opportunity to perform chesed. Right, that's what he liked doing. And chesed, we'll have to explain a little bit more. The time got short. The difference between chesed and tzedaka, the differences are minor. There's really a lot in common, and that's what we're going to assume as we'll continue tomorrow. There's a Gemara in Sukkah. I didn't put in the minor comments as a distraction. There's a Gemara in Sukkah that lists some of the differences between tzedaka and chesed. But for many things, they are parallels. We call, sometimes tzedaka is called chesed sheba mamono. And the other types of chasadim are called chesed the gufo, chesed you do with your resources, and chesed that you do with yourself, practically. So Avraham Avinu wanted to do chesed, which is the physical version of tzedakah. So God had originally protected him from that. That's what the Gemara says, that he should get a rest. So God made it very hot, so nobody was going to be outside. But then Avraham says, I'm miserable, I have no opportunities for chesed, I want to help somebody. So these three people show up, and he exerts himself to give them a tremendous meal, which is both physical chesed and also tzedakah, right? He gave them a lot of actual food. So what happened with these three people? Were they really starving people? They weren't people at all. They were angels. So it turns out they didn't really need the meal. They didn't need the hospitality. So what's the difference between that scenario and what I just described? What's the difference between that scenario and the employee who you just all agreed you'd fire on the spot? Right, Avram's time is certainly not worth less than your money. Avram wanted to spend his time the same way you wanted to give your money to some really needy person. And these weren't people at all. They weren't really needy. It's no different, it would seem, than the actor who, as soon as he leaves your office, puts on his normal clothes again. So what's the difference? We don't find that Avram has any complaints later. So I'll let you think about that question. And God willing, tomorrow's a normal shiur schedule, so we'll pick up with that point. And then hopefully get into a little bit more of the details of this Gemara. It's a wonderful meeting you all. If you have any questions, any issues, please don't hesitate to come forward. And you should have a wonderful day.